If you're a guest today, we have started a series in the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes was written by a king by the name of Solomon, who was extremely, extremely wealthy. Solomon, at one time in the history of the world, was not only the brightest person on the planet, but he was the smartest person, as far as wisdom, on the planet. And that's quite a combination, isn't it? And so what he did is he came to the end of his life. He looked back over the years and decades in which he had lived, and he wrote a book. He wrote more than one book, but the book that we're looking at is the book of Ecclesiastes, and he wanted to help us understand more about everyday life. What can we learn from a person by the name of Solomon? We've entitled this lesson, Life in the Fast Lane. Life in the Fast Lane. And the series is entitled, Finding Wisdom for Life. Last Sunday, while you were here having church, my wife and I were in church in Florida, in Orlando, and we went to Discovery Church. Small church, 4,000 or 5,000, small church there in Florida, one of many, many in Orlando. And so we went to church, and interesting enough, we heard their youth pastor speak, and he did a fantastic job, really a great job. So with that being said, he gave an illustration that fits in so wonderfully with our lesson today. He said there was a survey that was done, and there were two choices on the survey. The first choice was for you to make $50,000 a year and everybody else to make $25,000 a year that worked with you and around you. So once again, you make 50, everybody else makes 25. The second choice would be for you to make 100. Boy, that sounds better, doesn't it? So you could double your salary, go from 50 to 100, but everybody else around you made $250,000 a year. So really the question is, do you want to be the one that makes twice as much as everybody that you're around? Or you could double your salary, but yet everybody else around you would make two or three times more than you do. Well, the answer to the survey was interesting because the majority of people chose to make $50,000 a year and everybody else around them make $25,000 a year, rather than they make $100,000 and everybody else around them make $250,000. And so the principle of this is simply this: money is tied to social status. For example, if you made $1 million a year, does anybody here make $1 million a year? Probably not. My second question was going to be, if you do you tithe? That was my second question. But since nobody raised their hand, I guess they don't tithe either. So if you made $1 million a year and everybody you ran with made $1 billion a year, you would feel unfulfilled. You say, Jerry, I would not. For the most part, you probably would. You would feel less valued. You would feel like you had less influence. Now, that may not be the case, but oftentimes that's how you people would feel. That was brought out in that survey. And that is what Solomon is going to talk to us about during this particular lesson, is simply this. He is looking for something that seems to be a secret in life. And you know what it is? Finding contentment. Finding contentment. You know, a lot of people just need to find something to do, to find contentment. But even in finding that contentment, that won't satisfy ongoing perpetually until we get to heaven. There's something that is missing. Solomon tried to find the answer to this particular equation. How can I be happy every day of my life? Boy, what a question. Big question. Well, let's take a look at it together. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And I'm going to read quite a few verses, then stop, come back, and make reference to them. Verse 2, Solomon, I said to myself. So Solomon here is kind of thinking out loud, and he's writing, and he's giving it to us. Come now, I will test you with pleasure. Hedonism. Hedonism is just a big fancy word that means the pursuit of pleasure. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with hedonism or pleasure. So enjoy yourself. Live it up. Eat, drink, and be. Yeah, very good. And behold, that was futile too. That was meaningless. I said of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven, just a few years of their lives. I enlarged my works. Solomon said, I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. Is there a key word that kind of jumps out there? Myself, myself, it's all about me, right? I made gardens and parks for myself, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds of larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of the kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers. And notice here, the greatest pleasure of man on the earth, women, and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, listen to this, all that my eyes desires, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted. And behold, all was what, church? Vanity. I saw it all, I did it all, nothing stopped me. Imagine for a moment, if you could do anything you wanted to do anytime you wanted to do it. That was Solomon. Verse 12, so I turned to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? I mean, nothing's going to be done after me that hasn't already been done. I've done it all. And I saw the wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. Here he talks about the two ways to find pleasure. One is a calculated way and one is just reckless. He says the wise man's in verse 14, his eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I know that one fate befalls them both. Doesn't matter how you do it, we're all going to end up in the same place. Verse 15, then I said to myself, as it is the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I extremely wise? Why have I been so wise? So I said to myself, well, that's vanity too. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, insomuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fool alike will die. He kind of falls into depression here, John. This is right up your alley. He said, I hated life. Probably needed to call one of our counselors. Kind of fell into depression. I kind of hated life. I mean, he had so much, it became boring. You know what happens to many of these trust fund babies that you read about in life? They don't have a purpose. I mean, what do you do when you don't have to work or earn anything? It'd be fun for a day, though, wouldn't it? But back to reality, right? I hated life, for the work which has been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility. Everything is meaningless and striving after the wind. Thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I labored under the sun. For I must leave it to the man who will come after me. Hey, business owner. Hey, rich person. Somebody's going to spend all your money one day. Somebody's going to run your business one day. And guess what? They may not spend it, run it like you want them to. Because as soon as I do your funeral, mine, 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 mine. He says, who's going to come after me, to verse 18, and to the man who will come after me, I don't even want to leave stuff to, but I'm going to have to. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool, yet he will have control over all the labor, fruit of my labor for which I've labored by acting wisely under the sun. That too is meaningless. You know, imagine working all your life for something, and then literally a week after you're gone and in the ground, they ruin it. I mean, humanly speaking, it concerns me about our church. I mean, a few years, I would have been here 40 years, and I could walk out after 40 years, and off the record, some idiot could walk in and ruin the whole thing in a week. I mean, really, it happens. It happens. Google churches, and it happens. Somebody comes in, they've got all the answers, they want to do this and that, and I say, don't do that, that's great. Oh, Jerry, you're old, you're retired, yeah, you're right. And, you know, next thing, they got 30 people. Happens all the time. Now, sometimes it happens just the opposite. That'd be our prayer, amen? That'd be our prayer. But Solomon's concern is, just like your concern, I know many of you run your own businesses. Many of you are presidents or managers, whatever, and you're looking down the road and saying, what am I going to do with this? I talk to people all the time. Pastor, I've got nobody to take over my business. Nobody. My son's not interested. My daughter's not interested. I've got this business. I've got all this money coming in. I'm a millionaire, or I'm very, very wealthy. And I say, well, if you're that well off, why worry about it? But I didn't build it. Verse 20, therefore I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor for which I labored under the sun. When there is man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, then he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with them. You know, some of you, God bless you, you complain about a lot. If you'd gone through what I've been here the last 25 years, you wouldn't complain about anything. Do you realize at one time there were 69 of us in this building right here with $2.2 million of debt? Everybody, there were enough pews in here where everybody could have two or three each. We used to have 120 pews in here with 69 people. So you could put your coat on one bench, you could put your Bible on another one, and you could have the third one. It's all perspective, isn't it? It really is all perspective. Sometimes people come to our church and they go, well, how come you don't do this? Or why can't we have that? And I'm thinking, oh boy. We used to have to go out, and honestly, we used to buy our own pencils, our own toilet paper. I used to come in on Saturdays and clean the church for Sunday. You don't know all those things. It's a good thing. I'm glad you don't have to do it. So when we think about life and we think about perspective, it all comes back to what Solomon is saying, is that one day we're going to be gone and everything that we have done is going to go with it, whether we like it or not. There's going to come a day, as we said next week, where I'm going to go off the scene just like you, off of your job, your business. And here's what you and I think. They'll never make it without me. This job will never be the same where I work when I leave. I'll tell you what. And you know what happens? It goes right on. Right on. Nothing changes. Nothing changes. Are you going to play for 20 minutes? You can, because we're done at 10 after. So when we think, you're welcome to. You can sing too if you'd like to. Yeah. Solomon is challenging us as he looked down his life, these decades. I'm not going to have everything that I've had because one day I'm going to hand it over to somebody else. Boy, it's great wisdom. Verse 23, because all his days his task is painful and grievous. Even at night his mind does not rest. Boy, can you identify with that? Your mind just doesn't rest. You know, I just got back from vacation, but I'll be honest with you, my mind never rested. People say, you have a good rest. No. No. You don't rest when you run things. I mean, really, you just don't. You can't. And it's the same way when you go away to work from vacation, right? You don't rest. Paul, you're not resting. You're not resting. Just don't. Even when you go away from your jobs, what are you thinking of? Your jobs. Because that's the way we are. That's what Solomon's telling us. Verse 24, there is nothing better for man than to eat, drink, and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen, that is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? For to a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. While to the sinner, he has given the task of gathering and collecting so that he may give to the one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after the wind. The first thing, back up. First part of the chapter, he talked about food. I've got all the food. I've got all the laughter. I've got all the wine. Verses 1 through 3. Listen to how much food it took. Are you ready? To feed his entourage in one day. Here it is.
The daily food requirements for the palace were 195 bushels of fine flour, 390 bushels of meal, 10 oxen from the fattening pens, 20 pasture-fed cattle, 100 sheep, and from time to time, deer, gazelles, roebucks, and plump fowl. Historians have told us, are you ready? That would feed every single day between 10 and 20,000 people. Now, would you like to go shopping every day for that? That's his entourage. He talks about laughter. He says laughter doesn't work. I mean, let's be honest. Every time you tell that fish story, it gets a little bit longer, doesn't it, that fish? That catch you made in high school gets a little better. In other words, stories are embellished. Laughter is great. It's fun. But the reality of it is when we pillow our head at night, it's all meaningless. It doesn't sustain us. It's good for a while. It's fun for a while. I found an interesting article, speaking of things that are kind of off the chart. The king of Saudi Arabia visited Russia in this last year, and he brings everything with him, including his entourage of 1,500 people everywhere he goes. So last October, he went to Moscow to meet the president of Russia. He brought 1,500 people. He brought all of his carpets, all of his furniture, and his golden plated escalator. Escalator. Well, that was used to get down from the plane. But this is kind of funny. I really like this part. Bloomberg reports that the king stepped out of the plane, and he was using his golden plated escalator that he normally travels with. But unfortunately, the escalator stopped as the 81-year-old king was riding on it, forcing him to walk the last few steps. That's a shame, isn't it? Awful. He was probably traumatized from that, right? The king, as I said, brought all his things from home, including 764 pounds of food. And his entourage he brought, according to the article, to make his coffee. Well, that's wonderful. Now, this was Solomon, a few thousand years upstream. That's how Solomon lived, just like this king is living. The Bible talks about that he built projects, he built ponds. In fact, there are huge divots outside of Jerusalem, big giant divots, big holes in the ground. Those are called the pools of Solomon, which he built to water his trees and his plants and his gardens. They're there today. You can go see them. As we learned a couple of weeks ago, Solomon is gone, but those are still there, because that's the way it works. Did you know that in his projects that he built, how many years? Anybody know how many years it took to build the temple? Anybody want to take a guess? How many say 5 years? How many say 7 years? How many say 10 years? How many people just have no idea, preacher? Okay, good. 7 years. You know how many years it took Solomon to build his house? 14 years. Is there something wrong with that? 14 years to build his house. So I thought today, speaking of people that are affluent, who lives in the most affluent places in the world? Would you like to know? It's none of us, by the way. Just let the, you know, cat out of the bag. One of the richest people in the world from Mumbai, India, Mukesh Ambani, is worth about $24 billion. He has, are you ready, a 550-feet skyscraper, 27 floors high. That's his house. It's worth $1 billion, with a B, dollars. 400,000 square feet, 1,788 rooms, 257 bathrooms. Must be that Indian food. Gotta be. 3 helicopter pads. And just a small staff of 600 to make sure everything is working properly. 9 elevators to bring guests up to their destination. And he has reserved just 6 floors for his favorite automobiles. Just 6 floors. There's another person who lives in France. This also is worth $1 billion, but $1.5 billion. $1.3. Almost as many people as are in India. $1.3 billion in France. It's over a 50-acre area. It includes greenhouses, pool houses, swimming pools, outdoor kitchens, helipads, guest houses, larger than many mansions that some of the richest people in the world live in. Guest houses. You know, I often think, if this is mankind, what's our mansion going to be like in heaven? Right? The richest house in the world, which you might not be aware of this, is Buckingham Palace. The richest house in the world. Estimated value, $1.5 billion. Buckingham Palace, 775 rooms, 188 staff rooms, 52 royal and guest bedrooms, 92 offices, 78 bathrooms, 19 staterooms. $1.55 billion. Solomon built parks. You've heard of the country and city of Dubai, I'm sure, United Arab Emirates. Well, they are constructing what's called Dubai Land, kind of like Disneyland, Disney World, Dubai Land. The estimated cost, $65 billion. It is 107 square miles. Hey, you want to go to the park, honey? Let's walk for 107 miles. 45 mega projects, 200 sub projects. You say, Jerry, how in the world did they get all that money? We bought all their oil. That's how they got all their money. And that's the truth. Dubai Land is divided into six zones. Number one, attractions and experience world. Number two, sports and outdoor world. Three, ego tourism world. Four, theme, leisure, and vacation world. Five, retail and entertainment world. And six, they call it the downtown. It will be, when it's complete, and it should be complete very, very soon, twice the size of Walt Disney World Resort. Twice the size of Walt Disney World Resort. Solomon had all of that. Had all of that. He had ranches. He had all the money one can possibly have. He had music concerts, as we read, regularly. He had all the women in the world. Imagine to be able to choose the prettiest women in the world. He had them all. Reminds you of the story of Queen Esther. That's how she was selected, because she was one of the prettiest women in the kingdom. He tried it all. He defined two ways to pursue pleasure, as we read in verses 12 through 23. One is the reckless way. Just live life at its fullest. Reckless abandonment. Just go for it. Go for the gusto. Take the iced tea plunge. That's one way. He called those fools. But he did it what he would consider the wisdom way, in which he kind of held it together. He didn't ruin his life in doing it, in one sense, at least not physically or mentally. But he concluded, whether you live it recklessly or you kind of calculate it out, the end result is that you both die. He said, it's all vanity, so really I'm no different than the one that lives their life recklessly. Now remember, Solomon is looking through a secular human lens. He's not recommending we run out and do that. What he's saying is the end result is the same, and that's why he kind of falls into a little bit of depression. As we said, he looks and he says, you know what? I'm no better off than the guy who's really ruined his life, because my life's going to come to an end too. And everything that I have, I'm going to lose. And everything that I've worked for, I'm going to give away to somebody else, as we've already mentioned, that could just squander it. And that's exactly what happened. His son messed it up. Big time. His son, because of his greed, would not take good advice. And because he did not listen to the right people. He listened to his peers, didn't he? Instead of the older gentleman who had a little bit more experience. And boy, there's a good lesson for all of us in that, isn't there?
If you have a question about life, find somebody with some white hair. Or maybe no hair. Right? And ask them some questions. But that's not what Solomon's son did, and he split the kingdom in half. He ruined Israel, humanly speaking. He tried it all. And he realized, we all die. And as we said, he seemed to fall into this depression. He had a sense that life hurt him. Life hurts. Hey, church, is it fair to say that life hurts? It can be a real booger, can it? I'm sure nobody here has ever been hurt, just the other churches, right? And Solomon looked around and he said, all this stuff and all the things that I've done. He was Hugh Hefner before Hugh Hefner. He had it all. He was Bezos and Gates all combined. People from all around the world, Queen of Sheba, everybody came to see wisdom, to hear about wisdom, to see his wealth. And he realized, you know, one day, it's all going to be over. And the thing I think that bothered him the most, and I think deep down maybe bothers us too, is he, like us, we are helpless to change the law of diminishing returns. And he concludes, as we've already read in verses 22 and 23, for what does a man, in verse 22, get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors under the sun? Because all his days his task is painful and grievous. Even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. But in verse 24 he says, this also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. In verse 25, for who can eat and who can have enjoyment without God? Folks, you can have it all, but if you don't have Jesus, ultimately you'll have nothing. You'll have nothing. In fact, without Jesus, one day you would have wished, just like the rich man in the book of Luke, would have gave up everything. And he said, can Lazarus go back and tell my brothers? And no, sorry. You had your chance. Is it possible? Now, Jess, now we're ready for you. Is it possible? You're the best, by the way. Is it possible in God's providence and sovereignty that you're here today for a reason? Maybe you're here and you're living a life after hedonism, pleasure. It's all about what I can get, what I can make, who I can be with, my reputation, my education, my influence. And you know deep in your heart, you know it, there's a void there. There's something missing. There's a discontent. Solomon comes along and he says, you know, I've tried it all. And there's only content in Jesus. The author and finisher of our faith, the Alpha and Omega, the beginning from the end, Jesus Christ, the way, the truth,